Good morning. How's everybody doing? Good. My name is Laurel. I want to mess you up, Joe, but I get that a lot. Don't worry about it. Laurel Wilkinson. I am from the School of Education at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. And today I'm going to talk to you about a study that a few of my colleagues and myself, while graduate students at the University of To Be Named, performed at called Stress, Coping, and Oppression, Prevention in Education Project, Psychological Health, Discrimination, and Coping Factors, in particular among African-American men, African-American black men. But this project was broad and across the graduate student population and particular African-Americans in the undergraduate student population. Let's see if this works. Here are some co-authors. Just want to acknowledge them. Great contributions to the work that we did while we were at our location. I have nothing to disclose. And here's where the work was done. University of South Carolina. This actually was supported by a small pilot grant funded by the Institute of African American Research at the University of South Carolina. And a little bit about the objectives that were described in the handouts and in the program. So, looking at mental health outcomes, there's been an increased interest among the African American black population at large across the United States. This actually kind of really hit its peak when in 1999, then Surgeon General David Satcher released his famous report, Surgeon General's report on mental health. And in there, when it came to the minority population, there was a lot to focus on the fact that there are likely increased levels of mental health illness problems experienced in the minority population, but seeking treatment among this population was substantially lower, and that the mental health problems experienced in this problem population might help to promote the other problems associated in this population, like the hypertension, diabetes, heart disease, some of the things that we see in health disparities. Also in the report and in other research talked about the fact that groups that are often stigmatized experience greater means of discrimination, and that this discrimination also might be associated with greater levels of adverse mental and physical health symptomology. Pounding is interesting. Looking at discrimination on college campuses, when researchers like Baker and Smedley first decided to really look and hone in on discrimination among college students, because it's already been widely studied, Williams, Clark, Sellers, among other studies to name a few, African American, other marginalized groups experience broader rates of discrimination than non-Hispanic whites do. And so, although that's been well documented, during the 1980s, these researchers decided, you know, we really want to take a look at what's going on college campuses. And so, some of the first studies during the 80s looked at African American students and their reporting of race-related stressors or discrimination. Smedley looked at race-related stressors and found that that there were significant predictors of lower psychological well-being. Other studies during the 80s looked at campus life and looked at groups remaining very homogeneous. So to just describe it to you, a group of African Americans being on a predominantly white campus, a PWI, kind of staying to themselves, staying in a homogeneous group, might seem as a little bit of racial segregation, that they're self-segregating among the majority population, predominantly white population. But among that small group of individuals, they see it as social support, a way to connect. And so looking at those studies, later studies, a little bit more recent, decided to, you know, retake the looking at racism and discrimination on college campuses, but instead of looking to see if it doesn't really happen and to what extent it happens, looking to see at what happens and what are some of the outcomes of it happening, like greater stress or poor mental health. And so several studies looked at that, the study by ANSYS, the study by Greer. And Banks revealed that discrimination is a frequent and relevant part of the daily lives of African-American black students on a campus. And this wasn't surprising, actually, because previous studies in the larger population said that really, in terms of looking at African-Americans, African-American black population, racism, discrimination is something that is almost inherent in that you put on your skin every day, you're going to experience this. It's been documented that way in the literature. Ways that discrimination is exhibited on a college campus, Winslow and friends took a look at this. So sometimes it's just plain out verbal comments. And as uncomfortable as it is to talk about this topic, it's also very uncomfortable to be the recipient of those type of comments. I won't share, but you know, you can imagine avoidance. So maybe you're not included in the group. Maybe you are, you know, there's no law, no policy that says, hey, we're a group over here and you can't be a part of it. Maybe you're not excluded, but you're not included either. And so that ambiguity in itself might be perceived as stressful, or it can be institutionalized. There might be certain, you know, sections of campus when you go to the football game. I'm thinking about South Carolina. I'm thinking about Tuscaloosa, right? You know, when you go to the football games, certain students sit here and certain students sit here. And even though it may not be a policy that's written, or it's just one of those unwritten rules, and you kind of just know how to follow those unwritten rules. Or it might be something very physical, like you know, the looks, the strange looks, the touching, the violence. What previous study talked about bullying, you know, that's certainly a part of it. The expectation of inferior work, because you are of different, and this doesn't just have to be African American, you know, it can be Latino, it can be Native American, it can be Asian, but just a difference in expectation of work. All these things are exhibited on college campuses and at the society as large as well. So, a little bit about what the scope study sought to do, and there's a publication which were published in Ethnic and Inequalities of Health and Social Care. For the larger study, but what we sought to do was look at, you know, prevalence of psychological distress in the graduate student population, and look at African American, black versus non-Hispanic, white, and other groups in terms of prevalence of psychological stress. We looked at experiences of day-to-day discrimination and lifetime discrimination among our graduate sample. And what we wanted to do was we wanted to do a needs assessment, an exploratory study, to see what was going on. And I was a graduate student at this, self-disclosing, I was a graduate student at this time, to see what was going on amongst our population, and then to later inform efforts with administration and with amongst ourselves, so that we could say, hey, you know, this is what's going on, and this is what we need to do to remedy the situation. So let me talk about the methods. So I got to split this in two, because we did different methodology for the graduate student population and the undergraduate student population. For the graduate student population, we were able to utilize a graduate student listserv and send, you talked about using internet surveying. We used SurveyMonkey, and we went out and we sent this, hey, all y'all, will y'all take this survey? You know, please, pretty please. I personally went to about 3-4 organizations that were graduate student organizations and said, hey, you know, if you haven't done this online, will you take this survey? And by the way, if you have done this online, please don't take the survey. But I'm going to ask you again if you took the survey so I can make sure that we don't have duplicate surveys in the system here. Undergraduate student populations was very difficult. And here we decided to really concentrate on the African-American student population at the universities, HBCU in the metro area and the PWIs, University of South Carolina. And we went to classes and student events to go to the African-American students and say, you know, will you fill out the survey? Please. No incentives. Just want to, you know, get a sense of what's going on, and then I'm going to come back and talk to you and share with you the results. And IRB was given in January 2010. So here's a few of the individual behavioral and contextual demographic and information that we received from the student population: gender, race, ethnicity, program. If they could remember any of their scoring, we got that. High school zip code. Different questions about substance use, mentioned binge drinking earlier, marijuana use, tobacco use. We looked at those from 30-day measures, 2-week measure for binge drinking. Feeling safe on campus, asking, using Likert scale questions to look at questions related to student left, strongly agree, disagree. Questions related to comfortability going to receive health and counseling services. And then, of course, experiences of discrimination. We used the Warwick Edinburgh mental well-being scale, which explores mental health from a more positive view. Low scoring would be 14, that's less psychological well-being. A higher score of 70 means very good psychological well-being, good psychological health. We examined discrimination using 2 scales, lifetime discrimination scale. By Krieger, looking at experiences, and I'll share with you those in a later slide, and perceived day-to-day discrimination using Williams scale. And then, as I mentioned before, campus life questions using Likert scale questioning. So here's the, just so you can see it, the psychological well-being scale. You can see how there are questions about optimism, questions about being relaxed and useful, having energy and thinking clearly. So you can see how this is a very positive scale to use for psychological well-being. And then you can see lifetime discrimination. Have you experienced discrimination, been prevented from doing something, hassled, made to feel inferior in any one of these types of settings right here? And I will admit as a limitation now instead of later that, you know, everybody, you know, in college, you know, doesn't get hired going to a job or, you know, housing. What does housing mean? An apartment, student housing, having a house, buying a house if you're a graduate student, or receiving medical care. Going to a bank and getting a credit or a public a loan of sorts, you know, so, you know, there are some limitations here. Day-to-day discrimination, you can see that some of these experiences are things that you've already done this morning, you know, receiving service or talking to people. Maybe you've been to the store since you've been here, the outlets and things of that nature. So we had 99, in this case, African-American men. I did a subsample here. We had over 800 people surveyed in this data set, but looking at African-American men, we had 99. We looked at their mean psychological well-being scores using Prop GLM. When using an adjusted analysis, we used LS means. And what we did is we looked at our variables by school status. You either were a member of the PWI, predominantly white institution, the HBCU, the historically black college and university in the metropolitan area, or you were a graduate student. And if you were a graduate student, you were a graduate student at the PWI. And we looked at school-related constructs and health behaviors. So let me share with you the results here. This is just some descriptive information looking at the mean score of psychological well-being. You'll see that most of the scoring is in the 50s, which is indicative of, you know, pretty good psychological well-being. Like I said, a higher score of 70 is, you know, the highest score you can have. You'll see significant differences by grade point average. Those with lower GPAs, less than 2.4, indicated lower psychological well-being. you'll see that there were no significant differences in the mean score. Looking at other demographic characteristics of the students, but you do see a difference when it comes to if in conflict with the professor, I know where to go to seek help, like going to an ombuds person or having a mentor, somebody that they could talk to who would be neutral. You'll also see a significant difference in the campus promoting a safe and diverse, inclusive environment for students, and you'll see approaching significance when it comes to a peaceful and safe campus. Now, looking at psychological well-being and lifetime discrimination, so a total score of lifetime discrimination. So you'll see people here who reported on the yes category at the top. I've never been discriminated against, and folks who reported having been discriminated against. And the psychological well-being score is higher for those who've been discriminated. Interesting. Looked at it again and again. So I couldn't, it played out in SAS, so, but not significantly different. But what we did find, though, were different experiences that did show to be significant. So getting hired. So whether you got hired at the Gap or whether you got hired at Student Services, whether you got hired on campus, getting hired, facing discrimination in that realm, seemed to be very significant in being tied with lower psychological well-being. Same for getting housing. Whether you got housing on campus or at an apartment, getting housing was one of those things that seemed to be very salient during a person's lifetime. Well, when we looked at day-to-day discrimination, we saw just the opposite, that day-to-day discrimination, there was an overall day-to-day discrimination significant difference. And those who had never been discriminated against said, hey, we're reporting greater psychological well-being. We looked at this again just to make sure, and it proved to be true. But we saw no salient experiences among the different categories. Looking at our mean score by site, you'll see that with lifetime discrimination, those who went to the historically black college or university reported a lower lifetime discrimination. A lower psychological well-being. A lower psychological well-being given total lifetime discrimination. But none of the characteristics that make up, the components that make up total lifetime discrimination proved to be significant. However, the opposite was true with total everyday discrimination. And I apologize that I don't have that in the numbers in my slides, but the total discrimination was not significant. But there were approaching significant characteristics that seemed to be salient in the day-to-day discrimination. That was being called names or being insulted and being followed around in stores. And then lastly, you have mean psychological well-being going back to our first tables, but controlling for sight. And what you have here is when we controlled by sight, being your historically black college PWI or PWI grad student, you saw approaching significant variables for use of tobacco usage during the past 30 days and marijuana usage during the past 30 days. But not significant, and then still knowing where to go when there was a conflict with the professor still remained significant. So in conclusion, total lifetime discrimination was not associated with lower psychological well-being, but those instances seemed to be associated with lower psychological well-being. Opposite was true for total day-to-day discrimination. It was associated with lower psychological well-being, but there were no specific occurrences that we could identify that says, hey, these are very salient. Differences in psychological well-being was observed by GPA or knowing where to go if you had academic concerns or campus perceptions of being safe for diverse students. But when having school status in the model, those were no longer significant except for the academic concerns. I mentioned some of the limitations, but you can see the rest. But a strength of the study was it was an exploratory look at African-American men on a southeastern campus. And to help remedy the problem, because I don't just like talking about problems, I like talking about solutions, here are some things that our analysis says might be in line with the literature supportive of more psychological well-being or better psychological well-being among African-American men. Positive self-concept and confidence, helping them to understand and deal with racism, having a strong support person for individual, and acquiring knowledge as they go along in their studies. And with my colleagues, I'll take any questions.